Tim McLean pulled me in his room and said, I'd like to offer you a 9-year contract. Believe it or not, a 9-year contract. And I was like, that 9 years, that's like a prison sentence.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the CSI Football Podcast, where we embark on a forensic delve into a particular season of football, usually with a tartan tint. I'm your host, Ian Stephen. And for today's episode, we meet a man who everyone thought he was finished when he came to Scotland, but he was only just getting started. A man with wanderer lust, but the patient of a couple of saints. It's Helsinki's greatest export since Marimekko. It's Miksu Patalainen. Miksu, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. I like your intro. I've not heard that before. That's fantastic. Marimekko as well.
And, let's start with the naming of Miksu Patalainen, because Miksu is not your actual name in your passport, is it? It's another name you're given by birth.
No. When I signed for Dundee United, I was very lucky to get into the first team straight away. Even though I came from Finland, from part-time football and all that, I'm very thankful for Jim McLean to have a belief in me. I got playing, and straight away I got a couple of goals as well. So obviously the press wanted to have interviews with me, and every time before the interview, obviously they asked my name, and they said what, and I simply got fed up spelling it to the journalists. So I said, just put Miksu down, because if you are Mika, as my real first name is only Mika, like Mika Häkkinen, Mika. So if you're Mika, your nickname in Finland is either Miksu or Mika, and I was Miksu. In Finland, it's spelled with the K-S-U. So I say to the journalist, and here in Scotland, that just put Miksu down, Miksu Patalainen. And they spelled it with an X. And I saw that first time in the paper, that an X, I like that, instead of the K-S. I like it. Since then, even some of my contracts have been Miksu Patalainen, and I could have easily gone, this person doesn't exist. But it stuck with me, and everybody knows me as Miksu from there on. And quite rightly so. It would be still a long time spelling my full name.
It's like you're Brazilian, because the Brazilians never use their real names. It's always like Garrincha was like Little Bird, or Pele was a nickname. So
yeah, but they're real players. They're real footballers and skillful ones and all that, and they can carry that. But I'm just very ordinary.
We're going to throw your humility out of the window straight away, because you are a complete and utter promotion magnet. So there's no average footballer with you whatsoever. But I can tell you, as a member of the press and somebody who did quite a lot of the Hibernian games that you played in, especially in the first division, I used to curse whenever you scored, because I would have to look up how to spell your surname. I think you must have had about two different versions of...
Oh, I answer many names. Some are worse than others, I must say. But, there's few. Very rarely I hear it pronounced correctly, like Patalainen. I've heard like Patalainen is the usual one. Then the funny one is a Pantiliner. That's been there as well. And, like I told you, I answer many names, somewhere that direction, I'm there.
Well, we've never had a name from the eastern part of Scandinavia before, with Icelandic players and Norwegian players in Scotland. And we have this person coming over from Finland. So tell us what it was like to be born and brought up in Finland, because that's not a culture we were exposed to before.
Well, Finland is obviously a small nation, 5.5 million people, safe, very safe environment, very sporty. Very outdoor mentality in Finland. People enjoy the nature a lot. They go in their summer cottages, middle of nowhere, beside the lake, beautiful scenes and all that. And a lot of free time outside, going to the forest and picking mushrooms and berries and all that. So it is a very relaxed way of living. Of course, then you go back to your city accommodation, and you go to work, and it's hectic. But there's a real difference in that, how to relax and enjoy the nature. And when I was a kid, my father played football for Haka, which later, you know, was my first club in the Finnish Premier League as well. And then I grew automatically into football because he played. Then later he also coached them. He was the head coach of Haka as well. And so it was a natural for me. But I did almost every sport possible, from basketball to swimming, you know, to gymnastics, everything, athletics, almost all the disciplines in athletics. And so I was really sporty as a youngster. And that also helped obviously the football attributes, because in football you need to be, you need to have so many different kind of attributes. So that was a great automatic advantage for me to be sporty and involved with the different sports. But football was always the number one from young age. And then I asked my father to make me my own training programs and to develop skills all led to being very lucky and got to the Haka's first team in the Finnish Premier League young age. And then before I came to Scotland, actually, I had a chance to go to Germany, to second Bundesliga, to Meppen, SV Meppen club. But my father said that, no, there's an opportunity for you to go to Scotland on trial to Dundee United. I remember watching Dundee United in the UEFA Cup run that spring and early summer. And I was like that, wow, if I get a chance to go, you know, to a club that has just been in the UEFA Cup final on trial, that would be fantastic. And then all went well, and I enjoyed Dundee United. And ever since, I've been in Scotland, more or less.
Well, I was going to ask if it was players like Esko Ranta or Arto Tolsa were the players that you look to for inspiration as a young player, but
yes,
it's pretty clear it was your dad was the main kind of driving force for you as a youngster.
Yeah, Esko Ranta, obviously a very experienced national team player. He had actually retired when I joined Haka, but there were others. Haka was is traditionally a successful club in Finnish football, not in recent years, but in the 70s, 60s. 80s and 90s, 2000, not recently. There were loads of national team players. It was a great chance for me as a youngster to go. As a 15-year-old, I went to play in the third tier of Finnish football, a smaller club in Valkeakoski, could be called Pallos 44, but just to gain some to have harder games, if you like, physically and tactically and all that, instead of youth games. And then I was a couple of seasons there, and I got a chance to go to Haka, the Premier League side. I was delighted. I was just fantastic. And first season, we won the Finnish Cup, which went on to penalties, the cup final, the Olympic Stadium, and managed to score the winning penalty. So that was a great start as a young boy. So, like I said, I've been very lucky and very fortunate to get opportunities and have the chance to go and play football, which I love. If I had so-called a normal job, I would have still played football, that's for sure. But it's been my passion throughout my life, so that's great.
Before you were even invited over to Scotland, you were a fully fledged international. You'd made your debut for Finland against East Germany at 19, so it wasn't as if you were a complete unknown. But how did the trial go with Dundee United when you came over?
Yeah, give a little bit of background how the opportunity to come on trial came about. My father, he was a businessman, and he had some business connections in Scotland. He was on business trip here in Scotland, and the counterpart happened to be one of the board members of Dundee United. So, needless to say, after the business talks, the talking turned to football, and my father mentioned that myself as a youngster in Finland. You know, I had played for the under 21s and Olympic team, and made my full cap as well. So this board member kindly suggested that why does he not come over and train with the team for 4 weeks. That was the initial agreement, and see how it goes. And I came, and first week we had two reserve matches, which I took part in, and managed to score one in first and a couple of goals in the second one. And after that, Jim McLean pulled me in his room and said that I'd like to offer you a 9-year contract. Believe it or not, 9-year contract. And I was like, that 9 years, that's like a prison sentence. But in the end, we ended up signing a 5-year contract, and it was the best decision and fantastic decision in my life. And all started there. Wonderful time at Dundee United. Although Jim McLean was a top manager, there's no mistake about that. But he taught so much as well. He was a real genius on the training ground. But his man management antics were quite old school, put it that way.
Can you give an example of Jim McLean being old school?
Well, I knew my honeymoon was over after signing a contract, and maybe third or second game since I joined, signed a contract. We played the Dundee Derby at Dens Park, and we lost the game. So Dens Park is very little, it's tiny away dressing room, and after the match, we got paid, all went to sit our places, and we, Jim, went one by one through each of us, and basically slaughtered every one of us. He came to me, and obviously that was very early in my Scotland era, Scottish accent was difficult to understand, especially if somebody is raging, somebody is fuming and shouting at you, and you know, really angry, and I only understood three words: fucking Finnish bastard, and everything else went over my head. And then every time he took a breath, you know, I said yes. Yes, but I had my hands on my knees and looked him in the eyes and, you know, yes, but. And every time I say yes, but, he shouted even louder. He got more angry. And I was like, what can I do? I'm very, you know, I'm a good boy here and agreeing exactly what he says and all that. Then eventually it just went like that and went to the next player. I was like, thanks. Then after the shower, the boys came to me and they said, asked me that, Mikso, did you understand a word what the manager was talking to you and asking you? I said, no, only those three words. And he had asked me that, you were so bad today, that did you go to the boozer last night? Yes, boss. Yes, boss. Yes, boss. So he obviously thought that I was sarcastic. I didn't understand bloody word what he said. One half time, he came absolutely fuming in the dressing room. And I was one of the first in the dressing room. My place was in the corner. And he came straight to me and he kicked my knee. He kicked me and said that fucking better start playing you, and that was it. Unbelievable! So it was a tough guy, but it was a fantastic on a training ground. I mean, there are stories which we laugh now but that was the old school coaching. That was the norm those days. You know, it wasn't too much nicey stuff and compliments. You know, if he went every match one by one through all the players, and if you played well, he would just simply jump to the next player and didn't say anything to you, didn't say well done or anything like that. So that was his way. But we knew exactly where we were. But like I said, training ground, fantastic, genius, ahead of his time. Wonderful, wonderful manager. And I was very lucky that was my first. He was my first manager abroad because he taught me a lot.
Was it kind of daunting for you coming into that dressing room as a 20-year-old because David Neary was the captain? He was the player that scored that wonder goal against Brazil. Hegarty and Malpass, experienced internationals. Guys like Dave Bowman and Jim McAnally, who are tough tacklers on midfield. Eamon Barr, who's a veteran.
Brilliant player, EB. Paul Starrock. There were so many fans. Kevin Callagher, fantastic. Billy Thompson in goals. We had a really, really good team. So many Scottish national team players, hence we did well. We did well as well. We're in Europe virtually every season and the cup finals, and it was a great time. Really fun memories from that time.
And you did well your first season. You had 11 goals and United got to the cup final as well that season. Although it was the first of many cup final heartaches for yourself, Mixer, that we're going to have to talk about. But you must have thought, fantastic. This is it. This is what it means to be a pro, playing with all these great players and then in the cup final.
Yeah, it was a tremendous to get the cup final. My first season abroad, Dundee United, and Celtic, Camden Park, 72,000. Obviously, boy from Finland, you know, could have only dreamt, you know, crowds like that and big stadium and all that. Yeah, unfortunately, we took the lead. We were 1-0 up. Kevin Callagher scored a good goal. But then last 20 minutes, Frank McAvaney scored two goals and we lost it 2-1. So it was a disappointing result in the end, but nevertheless, a wonderful experience for a youngster coming from Finland. But it was a great start. I was lucky.
Your second season, you had 17 goals as well, which is a good return for a striker. Were you tasked by Jim McLean to get the goals, or were you meant to be the link-up man that held up the ball and brought others into play?
A bit of both. Obviously, as a striker, you're supposed to score goals and you want to be. But also, my style of play was to be a target man and to be strong in the air. If the defenders or goalkeeper opted to pass it along, you know, go for the header and flick it on for the likes of Paul Starock and Kevin Callagher, even Bannon, you know, fast players to run behind the line. So then also get the ball on my feet and control the ball and link up with the midfielders. You know, my game throughout my career was strongly based on those attributes, headers and link up play. So I wasn't blessed with the speed, with the pace. So I didn't run behind the defense that much. But also always, you know, the striking partner I played with, whether it was a white player or if we played with a two striker system, I played with a quick one. So I would be the link man. I would either flick it on or pass him through or link it with the midfield and then the through pass from there. So that was kind of setup, but, I was wrong, going for the crosses and scored quite a lot of goals from crosses and attacking the ball, you know, the crosses from the wide area. But it's a team effort and it's great and I loved it. I was lucky that I was able to play with so many talented players and help the team and give our fans a lot of joy.
Speaking of talented players, I mean, you'd Freddie van der Hoorn and Miodrag Krivokapic, they joined the squad the following season. Did you become a de facto foreign point of contact for players coming in that weren't Scottish or English players?
Well, no. I was obviously, there was no foreigners when I joined Dundee United, which I thought was quite surprising. But then later, like you said, Miodrag and Freddie joined and then the foreigners started to come and he came more and common that, you know, teams would have. Although when I from Dundee United joined Aberdeen, they had loads of foreigners, Ducks players and players. So, they have that. And obviously, both from, you know, they had players from abroad, but Dundee United, Jim McLean, before me, basically just favored Scottish players and why not? They had fantastic Scottish players as well. So, and won the title. I won the league with the fully Scottish players and only Scottish players. So there was no need for that. But I joined and felt home ever since. Even some Scottish people claim that I'm a Scotsman now, which I'm not. I'm a patriotic Finn. I must say that you know. But I've been here a long time and it feels like home. I go to Finland. You know, it's like, yo, Finland now. This is where I was born and everything is Finland, how it is in Finland. But when I come to Scotland, I take a deep breath. Wonderful. You know, I'm home now. So, you know, regard this place as my home.
They must think you've got a Scottish accent when you go back to Finland, surely.
No, I don't. I don't have a strong Scottish accent anyway, some people, some words say that you can detect that, but I don't think I do.
Well, 91, it was a cup final again for Dundee United. It was a classic game against Motherwell, the 4-3 final, but you weren't playing in that game. Were you injured for that final?
Yeah, against Motherwell. What happened there was those days, there was no international window, FIFA window for the national team. And we had a match with Finland leading to that cup final. And I went to play for Finland, and we had a match, was it Tuesday or Wednesday? And the cup final was Thursday. So Tim McLean left me out totally from that final. So I was disappointed, obviously, not to be involved, but he thought that because I had played for Finland during the week, I had traveled as well. So other players, you know, were chosen, and he left me out altogether. So that was the decision.
I mean, it's a bit of a luxury that your star striker and mix with Pat Lining can't play. So the player that you call up to play in the cup final is another youngster called Duncan Ferguson. I mean, that's cheating, surely. What's your memories of a young Duncan Ferguson at Dundee United?
Brilliant. What a character. Good and bad. I think with his antics, he was a wild youngster. But he's, you know, I think he was fined ahead by week's wages, you know, so, you know, it was always up to something, but on the pitch, what a player, strong, young, huge confidence in himself, what a finisher, aggressive, real bully against the center halves, tremendous player. I remember when we played the two striker system, Big Duncan, myself up front, you know, that was an easy afternoon for the central defenders. I'll tell you that, you know, we put ourselves about and did what we always did. But no, he was straight away when he came to the first team. He had no respect, you know, towards the old players. He went in, you know, straight in, and you know, he had fantastic confidence in him, and it showed. Hence, I think, not only the hardness, you know, his playing style, but he was a skillful. He was a fantastic taking the ball in, good technique, great finisher. You know, I was not surprised that he had a fantastic career.
Do you think that any defenders were looking at the team sheet before the game and seeing Pat Lynan and Ferguson up front? Do you think any of them suddenly went down with a mysterious muscle pull in the pre-game warm-up?
I don't think so. I think that they wanted to show us that you know, they got the upper hand, but no, it was a good fair tackle tussle with them. Not only the central defenders, but for the crosses with the keeper as well. I used to love, you know, banging in the goalkeeper against the goalkeeper, and you know, making sure that he knows that I'm coming, and the next cross, maybe he thinks twice whether he comes out or not, and I get an easier chance to score. But I think the game is psychological as well. No, it's you know, you want to show that you know, opponent is not in an easy match, but all within the rules of the game. Nothing too aggressive or whatever. Just fair and square, but hard.
You also had Christian Daly coming through at the same yep. time as well, who's maybe a different style of character from Duncan, maybe a more cerebral figure. Christian, he always came across as being quite thoughtful.
Yep. Christian was a different type of striker. Obviously, Duncan, myself, we were centre forwards. We were target men, to take the ball in and link, hit the ball. Christian was a runner, very fast, lightning quick, good finisher also. So he was the one who would complement the target man to running behind the defence, and he was the same. He was the same, although he wasn't. Mentality-wise, like Big Dunk, Christian was more quiet, softer, but his pace and his ability to finish was unbelievable. And everybody knew straight away that here we go. He's going to have a good career. He's going as he did. What a nice guy Christian is, and tremendous.
You showed you were a man of impeccable taste in 1993 by signing for Aberdeen. What instigated that transfer?
I don't know. Willie Millett had become Aberdeen manager, and quite straight after his appointment as a manager, he contacted Dundee United and wanted to sign me, and I ended up there. So I had been nearly 5 years. My contract was coming to an end. I had been nearly 5 years at Tannadice, wonderful time and all that. And I was a little bit that, you know, maybe try something else, but that opportunity came, and I knew Aberdeen was a good club, great club, with a history and all that. And with the players playing against them, I knew exactly what they had. Like McLeish and previously William Miller as a central defenders, always tough matches. I remember in one season when I was at Dundee United, we had two replays against Aberdeen in the Scottish Cup. You know, three times we played against each other. It was amazing in one tie. So at those days, it wasn't penalties. It was always a replay. But they were even matches, but I knew exactly how good the team was. And when I joined them, you know, it grew that way. My first full season, Rangers won everything. We were in the cup finals, Scottish Cup final and the League Cup final against them. And we were second in the league, and Rangers won the title. So we were second in every competition, which shows that, you know, we had a good team and we played well.
Do you think Willie and Alex both hated playing against you, and that's why they decided to send you?
I never asked, but I don't know. Maybe that had something to do with that. But maybe Willie thought that, you know, I want to have him in his team doing what he does. But I don't know. I never asked him. But that was I must admit that I was delighted when the opportunity came about and joined.
Straight away, you formed one of the best strike partnerships that Aberdeen ever had with Duncan Shearer, both of you getting over 20 goals. What was it like to play with Duncan on the park, and what was it like to hang around Duncan off the park?
Fantastic goal scorer, again, a real sniffer dog in the box. I played a lot of my matches in the white midfield, left hand side, and Duncan was up front, and he played often with Scott Booth or Ian Chess, and I was on the left hand side. I must admit that I didn't defend too much. I was a little bit cheating over there. But I remember when Stuart McKimmick, or right back, got the ball directly opposite, you know, right back. I was a wide left in the midfield. Willie used to shout, "Make so big diagonal cave," and I came from the wide area and jumped and headed it, and then the guys would run after it. It was pretty straightforward tactics, but beneficial for us. Also, we have Paul Mason on the right-hand side, supplying a lot of crosses to the back post for Big Duncan and myself. But he was a Duncan Shearer. He's a proper Highlander. He's from up north. He doesn't say much, but when he says, he's very prompt and he's a great guy, great character. He's funny as well. He's got a good sense of humor. But what a player! What a player is that? He said that when he joined, that obviously I wanted to score goals as many as possible. And he said that his target is to score 15 goals before Christmas and 15 goals after Christmas, before summer, 30 goals a season. I was like, wow, brilliant. You know, there's a man who really puts a high target for himself and demands from himself. It was great to play with him. Fantastic guy. And also off the pitch, we were good friends, family friends, great family guy, and we had good time.
There was a very famous goal that Duncan scored that Duncan doesn't remember, but you were in the opposition for this game, Miksu, because it was Scotland versus Finland in Helsinki, and Duncan scored in that game. What do you recall from what happened in that match?
Yeah, I remember it. We didn't, as a Finland team, we didn't play well at all. And all credit to Scotland, they nullified us and they won the game, quite rightly so. And Duncan scored. And obviously Scotland team, full of familiar players to me, playing against them or with them, or ex-teammates from Dundee United. It was quite a bizarre moment. I remember that match. We didn't play well. Scotland dominated. They played well and deservedly won the match. And Big Dunk got the goal as well. So I was obviously devastated that you know, he scored. But on the flip side, you know, I was delighted that he got a goal for Scotland.
Do you know that Duncan was knocked out when he scored that goal, when he scored the header, and he landed badly on his knees, and he tore ligaments in his knees, and he went out that night at a nightclub and was dancing away whilst having torn knee ligaments. He didn't know. He didn't work out until he sobered up and got rid of his concussion.
Maybe his dancing was better than the league one with God.
We have to also mention that the number 10 that played off you in that game was a certain Yamanin.
Yes.
You're going to have to tell us about Yari, because he, for a spell when he was at Ajax, he was untouchable in Europe.
Yes, yes. You don't win a Golden Boot in Champions League if you're not a good finisher. Fantastic. Best finisher I've seen. Technically, Yari is unbelievable. Finishing, passing, controlling, moving the ball. And he's not, he was never quick. He was never a fast player. But with his awareness and his technical ability, it was wonderful how he operated with the ball. Barely ever lost possession of the ball. When we did finishing in training, if he missed, if he didn't score, everybody was like, "What?" You know, he almost used to be like opposite. You know, if you scored, you know, everybody would, you know, brilliant, great. But it was opposite, you know, with him. Fantastic player, tremendous. But the technical ability was second to none. Unbelievable playmaker. And I was lucky that he played number 10 just below me for the national team. Maybe 40, 50 times we played together, and a great teammate, good guy. But like you said, his Ajax years with Van Gaal was fantastic, unbelievable. And Van Gaal really, really educated him as a number 10, as an attacking midfield player and a player. And later on, he joined Barcelona when Van Gaal was there as well, and Liverpool, obviously. So, you know, he did get a good chance to play for big clubs and be successful.
I mean, Aberdeen were successful in modern day terms, but at the time, finishing second Rangers in the league and losing both cup finals, it wasn't kind of good enough for a lot of the Aberdeen fans. But
yeah,
you ended up moving on after a couple of years. So in 1994, England came calling. So how did the transfer to Bolton get arranged?
Well, it was you know, the old saying says that you need to play well, right time, the right match, right, you know, and that was exactly that, because Bruce Rioch and Colin Todd. Bruce Rioch was a manager of Bolton Wanderers, and Colin Todd his assistant those days, and they came up to Scotland for a scouting mission, and they had they came to scout Andy McLaren, Dundee United player, winger, you know, dribbler, fantastic Andy was as a player. They came to scout him, and I had an injury with Aberdeen, so played in the reserve match at Tannadice, and Andy played in that match as well. It was a reserve fixture, and they came to scout Andy, and then after a match, they went downstairs to see Jim McLean, who expected to have a chat about Andy. But Bruce Rioch asked Jim McLean that he knew that I had been at Dundee United, that what is Mixo Partilano like? And Jim McLean kindly had said very positive things about me. And I think he said that he would take me back in a heartbeat to Tannadice. So that was good enough for Bruce. And then obviously then contacted Aberdeen and ended up going to Bolton. It was great again for me to get a chance to go to England and try English football. Obviously, English football is very closely followed in Finland because of betting. And even when I was a kid, you know, there was a live match every Saturday, UK 3 o'clock, Finnish time 5 o'clock, and used to watch every Saturday English, then first division match, top flight match. It was kind of, new era. You know, I had been in Scotland with two wonderful clubs, with Dundee United and Aberdeen, and then get a chance to go to Bolton. Bolton previously, last couple of seasons, had her fantastic cup runs, knocking out Liverpools and Arsenals and clubs like that. And, you know, they were, on TV regularly, and, I was really looking forward to get a chance to go to Bolton, and I'm glad that it materialised.
Were you surprised at the size of the club? Because Bolton are a kind of sleeping giant in England at the moment.
Yes, yes. I didn't realise how big club it was. I didn't realise it was one of the establishment clubs in the whole English football, and obviously not Lofthouse. Was every day at the ground, and you saw him every day there. You were like, wow, a legendary centre forward, and that. Once I went there, I realised there how big support Bolton Wanderers had and have, it was a great start. I was very lucky there to have a good start to my time. Got two goals in the opening fixture that season against Grimsby, and they were in then Championship, and then we were not in the Premier League then. My first season, but that was a wonderful season. But like I said, I had a good start to the season, and confidence was up, and I felt straight away like home. Maybe because there were with Tom McKinley has got his forward play alongside me up front. Owen Coyle, who was there as well, and there were a few Scotsmen there, and they've made my feeling like home as well, and it was good. It was a soft landing there, and successful landing, scoring two goals in my debut.
I'm thinking right in saying that John is from the same village as Duncan, yes, Shearer, and they're good friends. Did Duncan kind of reach out to John to help welcome you?
Yeah. They're good buddies, and they come from the small village, which is unbelievable coincidence. It was all the time, that John was talking to Duncan, I was talking to John and Duncan, and it was there was that triangle there. But it was unbelievable that such a small village in Ireland, Duncan had a very successful spell in England as well, scoring loads of goals. McGinley, John is a Bolton legend, he's a goal machine, got so many goals and important goals for the club. And it's quite amazing that on a small village, two fantastic strikers, centre forwards, they came from the same village.
You mentioned that Lofthouse is a legend at Bolton, but there was another legend in the dressing room wearing a pair of goalkeeping gloves at that time when you joined. I think, if I'm right, England's most capped player at that point.
He wasn't there when I joined. If you mean Peter Shilton.
Yes.
Yeah. Peter came, it was the end of that season. He was brought in because we had a huge injury problem, goalkeeping department. Aidan Davies and Keith Brannigan, who was the number one, they were both injured, and we went to playoffs end of that season and for the promotion to Premier League, and we didn't have a fit keeper. So Peter Shilton was brought in, and he played in the semi-final against Wolves. He played in that game. So it was quite amazing having Peter Shilton suddenly as a teammate. The younger viewers and listeners are thinking, oh, he's showing his age now. He even played with Peter Shilton, but he was what a legend. Unbelievable. And what a gentleman. What a nice man. I must say that was towards very end of his career. He wasn't as agile and that he was in his younger days, but still a good keeper. Did the job for us.
There was a lot of real talent in that Bolton side as well. You'd be an Icelandic player, Alan Stubbs and Alan Thompson that later joined Celtic, Richard Sneakis, David Lee, and Jason McIntyre, who had gone to play with Liverpool. So maybe not a surprise at Bolton that well that season.
No. Bruce Rieck and Colin Dodd, they really put together a fantastic side. Obviously, I didn't realise that at the time, how good, beforehand, how good the team was. I knew the team was good because previous season they had beaten Liverpool, Arsenal in the cup competitions and stuff like that. So they had to have, good players. But once I went there, I realized that, by the way, we really have a side that can dominate the matches and win matches, and which was right. Strong characters as well. Owen Coyle, John McKinley, like you mentioned, Alan Stott as a captain, centre half. What a passing ability. Unbelievable passer of the later went to Everton. Jason McAteer, what an engine, you know, up and down that midfield, you know, real box-to-box midfielder, fantastic player. He definitely had a goal in himself as well. Fabian de Vreeters, a Dutch centre forward who scored two goals in the playoff final. Owen Goyle and myself scored the other two. We had a really good balance and plenty quality, plenty pace, right players for each and every position to dominate and have something extra, an X factor for every position. He was fantastically built team. Sorry. But also, what I must emphasize, Bruce Leoks, as a manager, he was excellent. He was very high on discipline. He was towards the old school mentality, although nowhere near like Jim McLean. No chance. But he was good on training ground as well. Colin Todd, fantastic coach. But what Bruce Leoks did as well, he didn't underestimate the team spirit side of things. And how important it is to have a good team spirit in the team. He made compulsory family events at the training ground. Our training ground, he said, obviously, after Saturday's game, he said, everybody, I can't remember, 1 o'clock to the training ground and bring your girlfriends, your wives, your children. If you want to bring your crannies, by all means, your aunties, you know, all your relatives, if you want. And he had organized the bouncy castle for the kids, you know, the magicians, you know, the fishing and blah, 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 everything. Lovely food for us and the wives and the adults, a few drinks as well, a glass of wine and all that. And I remember first couple of those events, family events, everybody was looking like, you know, and the women were looking like, handbag and, oh, it's got nice shoes and not too much chatting. But as these events, you know, came after each other, suddenly we became real good friends. And not only, but the wives, you know, knew each other and all that. And in the players' lounge, when we played, you know, before we went to see the family, they had already, the wives agreed that we'll go to that restaurant for a meal tonight, and 8 of us or 10 of us or whatever, you know, couples and all that. So. It wasn't just players, you know, have that team spirit, but it was the families. And we got to know everybody's families. We were together, you know, then the christenings and all the family happenings. So we really had a tight knit, you know, bunch. He was fantastic, you know, and enjoyable from that aspect as well. So all credit to Bruce Leoks, he created that.
Well, let's talk about one of the kind of main results of that. Good team spirit. It was the Coca-Cola Cup, which is the League Cup in England. And it was a really kind of successful run that you went on in that competition. You started off with two rounds in round two against Ipswich, 4-0 on aggregate. And it took you into round three against Sheffield United, where you were able to score an own goal as well. And you defeated Sheffield United 2-1. Then November away to West Ham. So Upton Park, that must have been pretty exciting place to go to, because in those days that was a small, tight little ground, and the Hammers fans were very passionate in those days.
Yeah, absolutely. He was a big skull in our cup run prior to the final, obviously. You know, beating West Ham away in London 3-1, if I remember correctly, and that was a big result for us. Then obviously semi final Swindon Town. Who were in the Premier League those days. We were in the Championship, and if you talked, you know, you might remember the striker, Norwegian striker, you know, scored loads of goals for them. I remember the first match against Swindon. It was a two-legged semi-final. Away at Swindon, we lost 2-1, and we didn't play well at all, and we got beat, but thankfully so narrowly. And then the home match, Burton Park was like a mud bath. It was amazing. I don't think there was any grass on the pitch, maybe next to the corner flag a little bit, but it was a real, when you look at the pitches nowadays and when you look at the pitches those days, it was an unbelievable difference. So And we managed to beat them 3-1 at home, although they took the lead. So we were really up against it. But he was a fantastic after the victory in that game, and knowing that you go to Wembley against Liverpool was in the League Cup final was a fantastic feeling and brilliant achievement for us.
What was it like for you in the lead up to that point? Because you'd been to finals at Hampden before with Dundee United and Aberdeen. What's the difference when it comes to attending a final in England? What's the build up difference?
I think the media hype is bigger, a lot. The week leading to the final, or 2 weeks leading to the final, should I say, so much media stuff. I remember our press officer, he had his hands full, you know, to put players in the different interviews and TV interviews and radios and stuff like that and everything. So I don't think there's any other difference in that. Just the media involvement is bigger, was bigger anyway. It is obviously big in Scotland as well, and much bigger than normal league game. But, over there, it was huge. It was. I realized that. I was like, wow. Here we go again. Another interview. Another one, and all that. So the hype is built, you know, through media a lot down south. The final itself, as I had a player, it's the same. Bruce Rea took us to Wembley before the final the previous day to work on it, to get to know, here we're playing tomorrow, because I don't think too many of us, if anybody, had played Wembley before. So we had a little walk on the pitch and looking at it. But Liverpool on the final. Liverpool were too strong. McManaman, what a fantastic match he had. You know, he's got two goals, his dribbling ability, you know, going past our players and finishing as well, was excellent. Alan Tolson actually scored our goal. We got beat 2-1. I flicked the ball to Tomo. Tomo had a good volley right to the top locker. He scored our goal, but unfortunately, we lost that game. And I remember after that match, Bruce Rioch saying, although he didn't know that we were to reach a player final that very same season. After the League Cup final, although we got beaten, we were disappointed and heads down in the dressing room, we said that heads up, next time we come to Wembley, we'll win. He said, although he didn't know that we would end up there, but I don't know where he pulled that sentence, but that's what he said. And then when we reached the player final later, after the season, later that season, a large match of the season, and we won it. And I was like, that. I remember what was said. Unbelievable. So it was a nice experience, but again, unfortunate defeat in the cup final. So you were talking about promotions. We had two promotions with Bolton to the Premier League during my time, with Bolton and one relocation from Premier League and all that. And I've been promoted in France and to the top league and Scotland and all that, but there's been cup finals that not been very successful for me, nevertheless nice experiences and that, but only the Finnish Cup is to show.
I mean, you could understand after losing the League Cup final, you could understand the form just completely dropping off, the team's devastated, but Bolton managed to get third place. Only one team went up in that year, Middlesbrough, and then it was Reading, Bolton, Wolves, yep, and Tranmere that went into the playoffs. You lost the first playoff leg 2-1 to Wolves, and then the semi-final second leg and the final were some of the most thrilling games possible, and not very good if you've got any form of heart condition as a fan. You were able to pull two goals back for John McGinley in the semi-final to see off Wolves 3-2 in aggregate. And then, as Bruce Rioch said, 29th of May, Reading at Wembley Stadium. And this one goes into extra time, and a certain mix of Pat Lynam was on the score sheet in extra time for Bolton. What do you remember about the playoff final?
It was unbelievable. It was if ever there's a match is a roller coaster, how it goes in terms of scoring. That was the one. After 20 minutes, we were 2-0 down to Reading. So we didn't have a good start. We were on our heels. Reading started really well on their toes. After half an hour, they got a penalty. Reading got a penalty to put them 3-0 up. Thankfully, Keith Brannock and our goalkeeper saved it. And I remember Bruce Rea at halftime, his message was, keep it going. We'll come good. Branny's save is the sign. Branny's save is the sign. We will come good. And of course, he sharpened up a couple of positions, how we should play and all that. But he said, don't put your head down. We'll come good. The penalty save was a turning point for this match. And 11 minutes before the, or something like that, very end of the game anyway, 90 minutes, we got Colwyn Coyle scored a goal. We got 2-1 goal. I think it was 7 minutes or something like that before the 90 minutes. Fabian de Freitas got a 2-2 goal. Unbelievable. We had the momentum. We had the momentum then, you know, being a 2-0 down. And then later in the match, before 90 minutes, you know, we came level terms, 2-2. Then the extra time, typical Rolls thing, bank holiday Monday, absolutely boiling. Wembley, huge pitch as well. Extra time, I managed to score 3-2. We were in the lead. I remember the shivers going back on my spine. I'm running Wembley. I think I did the forward flip again, you know, over there. And I was like, you know, blah, blah, blah. I just heard that of fans, which was like a half of Wembley, you know, screaming their heads off. And oh, what a feeling. What a feeling. Then Fabio de Freitas scored 4-2 for us. Then Reading got 4-3 goal. And the last 5 minutes, they bombarded our box. Honestly, it was like one end, you know, they bombarded. Thankfully, we held on and won the game 4-3. But what a roller coaster, what a match. It was so exciting. Very evenly poised a match as well. It wasn't like, you know, one team was clearly the better side. Like in the League Cup final, Liverpool, they were better. Player final was end-to-end stuff and chances and all that. But to come victorious after that match, what a feeling that was. Last match of the season, Wembley playoff final, and the prize is being promoted to the English Premier League. It was amazing. I remember, obviously, going in the bus, to the bus afterwards, and we had our card school, you know, we played cards in the bus, and the away trips, and we had our own seats on the bus, and John McKinley sat directly opposite to me, and we didn't play cards. We were just looking at each other and say that, wow, we got promoted, you know, and you know, what a feeling it was. And he was like, wow, we did it. It was tremendous. I know winning the league and getting promoted through that is special and fantastic. Like we did with Bolton 2 seasons after that, back to Premier League, and we won the championship. But winning through the playoff final, there is something, you know, it's like a cup final. It's a one-off. And when it goes to extra time like that, and you win it after extra time, it is extra special. It was a wonderful feeling.
Did your life just completely change just in the space of a day? And the other players in the Bolton team as well, because the jump up from the second tier in England to the top tier, it's from a very kind of, I don't want to say childish, but from an innocent point of view, remember, as a schoolboy, you'd think, wow, I get to play Anfield and Old Trafford. But the reality is sponsorship increases, contracts change, media commitments, exposure. You cannot be found at a bar at 3 o'clock at night because it makes the front page of a newspaper, that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's in my books, it's the best league in the world, and to get a chance to play in that, like you say, the legendary stadiums, and all that, and teams, is special. And it's for me, you know, you can't play higher, you know, the league in the world, and that is the top, but. You know, the feeling afterwards, acknowledging this fact, and the, you know, we're going to play all these stadiums and all these teams, and, you know, and being there and being right on top of the football was great, was unbelievable. Unfortunately, I suffered quite a lot of injuries the following season in the Premier League, but it was nevertheless it was great.
We'll put that down as a reason why Bolton didn't do very well. The fact you were injured.
I don't think that was the reason. Thank you, Ian.
Bruce Rioch moved on. It wasn't a great season for Bolton, but the following season, Bolton's form was just absolutely sensational. You barely lost a game. Motion with points to spare, and you were back up again. And I think possibly you might have been instilled as a kind of Bolton hero by that point, but you eventually had to move on from Bolton. You went to Wolves. Mark McGee came in for you. And the amount of competition you had in that striker room for a place, Dougie Friedman, Robbie Keane, Steve Bull, Don yep. Goodman, it must have been really difficult to get into that side.
Yeah, we had a lot of quality strikers in the squad. And first of all, it was I was really keen joining Wolves. Fantastic, legendary club, brilliant club, and all that. I was delighted that Mark McGee took me there. But it was more of a rotation of players. I didn't play too much. I played mostly the cup matches, and I didn't start too much in the league. Came on as a sub, started here and there, but never got the rhythm. You know, you want to play like 3 to 5 matches on the bounce, you know, from the start to get into the rhythm and all that. But if you're a sub, you play 20 minutes, half an hour, 10 minutes, 5 minutes here and there, you don't get it. You don't get the rhythm going and all that. So it was kind of an unhappy period for me because of that. Any player will tell you that you want to play regularly. And you're so eager to do your best for the club and for the fans, be successful and yourself. Myself as a striker to score goals and help the club and give fans some joy. When you don't get a chance, you don't play regularly. I'm not happy. I would rather play somewhere else, maybe lesser standard, but play all the time. And money is not everything. So that's the kind of character I am. So I started to look elsewhere. I was there a year and a half, almost 2 years, and then decided that that's enough. And I was really happy that when then Alec McLeish, who had followed my career and exploits, she like he became the Hibs manager, and he wanted to bring me to Hibs. And obviously, having played in Scotland, having played against Hibs, I knew exactly, you know, what a great club Hibs was, and I had no hesitation at all to join. And even though we were in the first division, the Scottish first division those days, we were not in the Premier League. But I knew Alec, Aberdeen days. He was my teammate there. What a character, what a leader. What an intelligent man he is, and I thought that he'll do a good job for Hibs, and let's join, because you know, I'm sure that something good will come out of it.
Well, there was two other players that also joined that stand out to me. Frank Sozzi joined, who was in the European Cup final with Marseille, a class player. You also had Paul Lovering joined as well. Paul was in the year above me at school. I've never seen a player that loved a 50-50 tackle more than Paul. What's your memories of playing with two very different types of players?
And he wasn't a big frame guy. You know, he's normally the big frame guy that liked the little physical tussles and stuff like that. Lovers, Paul is a small guy. He's a wee terrier. He's a typical Scottish guy. You know, getting there and blah blah blah. Oh, he was exactly that. But he was fantastic as a fullback for us. You know. Going forward and delivering crosses and loads of energy, great teammate, good fun to have around, fun memories play with Paul, and I've not seen him for ages, like many others either, but you know, every now and then the names pop up and you start thinking and you remember some things, you know, how we played together. It was fantastic.
Well, there's somebody else that you played with at Hibs, and they delivered both a compliment and they also asked me to ask you a question that could get you in trouble. So we'll deliver the compliment first. Tam McManus said that you were the best strike partner that he ever played with.
Thanks very much. Fantastic. It was great to play with him because we spoke earlier about the pacey, fast player and then the linker player to complement each other. And Tam obviously was really, really fast and light on his feet and loved, you know, his game was based on running behind the defense. And I was the target man, the link player. We had a fantastic partnership. There was no question. He was very young when he broke into the Hibs first team and he was fantastic. He scored loads of goals, good finisher, and always there, always willing to run behind and cause trouble to the opponent. It's nice to hear that Tom thinks those lies, the feeling is mutual. It was fantastic to play with Tom as well. It was great.
He also mentioned a pre-season trip to Germany where everybody got special haircuts.
Yes. And this is where all this started. So obviously I was losing my battle up here. And I realized that, it won't be long that my war is lost. We were in pre-season in Germany and I was one of the elder players in the squad and Alec McLeish, his manager, he gave us some money, some kitty for a night out, the last night of the pre-season tour in Germany and to take the boys for a couple of beers and be together and all that. So we went to this local bar and then when it closed, I still had, notes left, money left, and we took a huge carry out from the bar back to the hotel. Everybody in the same room, it was great. But team spirit and all that and banter. And then I say that somebody said that we should do something. The first match of the season, by the way, was against Hearts. It was Edinburgh Derby, somebody said that we should do something drastic. Something that, we're the team and everybody does it before. And then I said that, yeah, let's go skinheads. Let's shave our heads off, hairs off. Because I wanted to do that because I had been losing my hair. And I was like, nah, I want to try it. Let's do it with the boys. So before I finished the sentence, let's go skinheads. That was the first guy, getting cut. And then the battery ran out and it broke down or something like that, the whippers. So we used Swiss Army knives and used everything, it was horrendous. And needless to say, once players realized, oh, by the way, they're serious, they're going to go skinheads. There were a few that by the wall, they started to escape the room and all that, and they're not going to do that. But anyway, we were determined, and quite a few of us we did it. And then in the morning, on the bus, we went to the airport, and Mac was the first one on the bus. We started going, and he started seeing these skinheads, and he was like, no. And he takes the mic when everybody was on the bus. He takes the mic and he says, guys, you have put some pressure on you now for the derby match, for the first match of the season. We were like, come on, bring it on. Let's get ready for jumbos. And it was great. I remember on the plane, flying back from Germany, I was my seat was right at the back of the plane. And I was able to see these heads, these skin heads. And because we didn't have proper clippers in the end, there was little lumps of hair here and there. And it looked terrible. It was like potato. And it was unbelievable. Oh, there's one of my guys. There's one of my guys. It looked horrendous. As soon as we landed in Edinburgh, took a taxi straight to the nearest, close to my house, the barbershop. I said, take it all off. Take it all off and even it up. But it looked terrible. But that's what we did. So that was great. That was fantastic. It was one of those stupid things that you do when you're in the crowd.
I mean, you scored, I don't think it was necessarily that game, but you scored a hat-trick against Hearts in a 6-2 win for Hibs. So you're now a hero in Hibs' eyes. You made the cup final again. You become the first player to play in Scottish Cup finals for three different teams against Celtic in 2001. But your atrocious cup final luck continued, Mixu. You lost to Celtic. But then following that, your excellent promotion record continued because out of the blue, you get a move to Strasbourg. How do you get a team in the French second division contacting you and getting you to come over?
It was because David Zitelli, our striker at Hibs, he comes from Strasbourg and he used to play for them. So the sporting director at Strasbourg those days was Mark Keller. And Mark Keller had contacted and asked him that Strasbourg, they're in desperate need for a centre forward. Would he know anybody willing to come to Strasbourg? And Zitelli recommended me. So David recommended to Mark Keller me, and Mark Keller then saw the Edinburgh derby where I scored a hat trick against Hart, the negotiations started from there. And my contract was coming to the end of the season anyway. So that's how I ended up in Strasbourg. It was David Zitelli was a linkman there and made it happen. So it was a great experience to go and play in France. And I was already, if I remember correctly, I was 34 at the time when I got my move to France. It was totally different. The training, the way of life, the way they treat players, the way you prepare for the matches, the sports science side of things. Everything was so different to what I had used to in UK. They are so ultra professional over there. They're almost too professional. Those days anyway. He was amazing. But obviously he taught me a lot. We had a fantastic head coach, Ivan Hasek from Czech Republic. And Ivan was fantastic with his feedback and with his training and how we prepared and all that. So I learned a lot that time. It was an unhappy season for me because very early in my time over there, we played the UEFA Cup tie against Standard Liège in Belgium because Strasbourg had won the French Cup the previous year. We were in the UEFA Cup and we played in Belgium. I broke my fifth metatarsal, my third, one of the bones, and it didn't want to heal. I was out for 6-7 months. It didn't heal at all. It was we tried everything, we operated and all that. Then eventually, towards the end of the season, it got better, and I got rid of that injury, and I played couple of matches at the end of the season. It was a pity because it was a great opportunity for me to go there quite late in my career, well over 30, 34, I think I was, but it gave me a lot. Different kind of approach to football training, like I said, sports science and all that for my management years later on as well. It was a great year. I had a chance to stay in France, a club called Créteil, after that season, but I was pretty fed up with my injury and unhappy season with that. So I just wanted to return to Scotland and Edinburgh.
When you came back to Scotland, you came to St Johnstone and you were assistant manager.
Oh, I didn't. No, I didn't. I came back to Scotland and then people don't believe me, by the way, this story I'm going to tell you now. I was keeping fit. I was running Arthur's Seat and the hills and all that and keeping myself fit, hoping that I would find a goal. Bobby Williamson was a new Hibs manager with his backroom stuff. And the young boys, the youth team and the 19s had started training and he was there watching them doing a few runs. And I joked to them and I said, you know, good luck for the season and all that. And he asked me that, what are you doing? I said, I have no club and just keeping myself fit. He said, well, first team starts training tomorrow. I fancy coming along and much better to train with the team. And so I said, absolutely. So I went there and then after a few days, you know, he pulled me and he said that, well, you're still producing it. You know, you're fit, you're playing well, scoring, and training. And so why didn't you go and see Mr. Petrie and try and negotiate a contract? So I ended up going to Hibs, back to Hibs, which I stayed one season. And then after that, I went to St. Johnstone, to Billy Stark, which was quite a surprise in a way that I wanted to stay at Hibs furthermore because I felt that I was contributing. But nevertheless, I wasn't offered a new contract. But then Billy Stark from St. Johnstone contacted me and went from there.
Was that when you took your first steps into management?
Yes. St. Johnstone, I was a player assistant manager. Billy Stark was a manager, and that was the first time I was coaching management in the first team, if you like. But after Strasbourg, when I joined Hibs, Park, who was the head of youth, asked me that he knew that I had aspirations to coach, so he asked that would you be willing to take under 15 while you play Hibs under 15 side? I said absolutely, I would love that. So I took under 15s as I was playing for the first team. And I also same year under 17s coach left and I took under 17s as well while playing. And it was a great, both were the great first steps in coaching for me, starting under 15s and under 17s and then going to St. Johnstone and play assistant manager role. It was great. And Billy Stark, he's a fantastic manager. Brilliant. Learned a lot from him. It was unlucky that, obviously, St. Johnstone, we were in the championship those days, and we didn't get up. So, he had to go towards the end of the season. It was a real pity because he wasn't his fault. He's a tremendous manager, and coach. And then I was the caretaker manager the last couple of matches of that season. After which I went to St. Mirren.
I think if we're going to talk about your managerial career, Mixu, I think we'd have to have a completely different episode because it stretches over decades and continents. So we'll round off this episode. We've got some fast fire questions for you to finish off. Okay. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to the first one. Who's the best opponent? What player is the best opponent you've played against? And bearing in mind, you've played against like France and Italy and West Germany for the international team, you're going to have a cracker for this.
Directly against me or in the team?
Let's say directly against.
Against Frank Rijkaard for Holland. I was in his pocket, totally and deep in it as well. What a player he was. Tall, strong, fast, technical, you name it. He had everything. Obviously, with Finland, we played against Holland. And I remember that I was deep in the air. You know, won my fair share in the air. I didn't have a chance against him. He was unbelievable, much taller than me as well. But like I said, strength, pace. Oh, it was one of them matches that you thought of. Oh,
who's the best teammate you've ever had?
Oh, it's a difficult one. If and when I name one, a lot of players will give me stick. So, best teammate, probably have to say Antti Niemi. For Finland, we were roommates over 10 years, just over, I think. We were roomies and good buddies and good friends. It was a real pleasure to score 3 against him.
Okay, we're going to have to get Antti on to give a writer reply. And apologies to Tam McManus. He said you were the best player he ever played against. That could have been your opportunity to say it was Tam, but never mind. Hey, Mixu, what was your best goal you ever scored?
Best goal? Or most important?
You choose, you're the striker.
I think the most important goal was probably the goal Wembley player final, because that we got the lead, 3-2 lead in that match, my goal. But best goal is probably semi-final in the League Cup in England against Wimbledon. Left foot strike from about 20, 25 yards to the left top corner. That was also a goal that drew us a level in that semi-final. And then John McGinley scored the winner. But that was probably the best goal because I didn't score too many long-range goals. It was more from crosses and inside the box. But that was probably there.
What was the best stadium you've ever played at?
Wembley.
That's the old Wembley, the one with Terrace and
He was all Wimbley, yes. Fantastic. It was great.
What's the best prank or joke you've ever witnessed played on somebody in the game?
When John Hughes at Hibs nailed Dirk Lehman's shoes, which were horrendous. He nailed them with their bloody big nails, nailed them to the floor. You know, that probably that was the funniest. And then the Dirk tried to get them, you know, put the shoes on and nailed to the ground. Brilliant.
What's the best insult you've ever heard on the pitch?
I take all the insults as compliment. So don't know about that. I don't know. The worst insult.
It's probably from Jim McLean in the dressing room and you didn't understand it.
I know. Probably that.
What's the best crowd chant you've ever heard? The best crowd chant, the best crowd song
I've ever heard. It would have to be, there's only two Andy Gorhams.
All right. On that brings us to the end of another episode. Join us next week for another forensic journey into the annals of Scottish football. Our website's at csi.com and you can find all our socials. My thanks to Miksu Patalainen for being an absolute legend and a gentleman. Thank you, Miksu.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. Brilliant. Thoroughly enjoyed.